Good morning, everybody, and welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. I'll be here until 11 o'clock this morning. This first hour is an open line, then a conversation with Julia Reitz, the Champaign County State's Attorney. Tomorrow on the show, an open line at 9, then Kay Green talks about the Nutcracker just after the 10 o'clock news. And on Friday, open line the first hour, then Lincoln historian Guy Fraker talking about his new book, A Guide to Lincoln's Eighth Judicial Circuit. You want to know stuff about Abraham Lincoln? This is the guy, Guy Fraker. I've had him on the air before and look forward to talk to him again on Friday. Our phone number is here, 356-9397. The heating and cooling text line from Castle is 351-5357. What are we going to talk about today? Well, a lot of the open lines wind up being what you want to talk about, and that's just fine. That's what we like to do on an open line. Here are some of the headline stories that I want to get to today. Get to some of these, I'm sure, but some of them probably not, because you're going to have a lot of ideas of things for us to talk about. In addition to these, North Korea launching the longest range missile yet, says it can reach all of the United States. I don't know about you, but this nutcase over there in North Korea worries me. Worries me. And a surprise announcement today, Matt Lauer fired from the Today Show due to inappropriate sexual behavior in the workplace. That one, this came out of the blue. Some of the others had accusations at the beginning. That was the first story, accusations, and then came the firings later, a day or two later sometimes. But this one, bang, he's gone. NBC also fired a senior executive who was what they call a booker. It was Lauer's booker. It's a guy that books guests for Lauer on the show. And Lauer became so powerful on the Today Show that Matt Zimmerman, that's the booker's name, he wound up booking guests for just about everybody on the show. He kind of took over the role. And he also apparently had something to do with, at least the accusation is, he had something to do with booking some of the women that Lauer has been accused of having a inappropriate sexual behavior with. Angela Lansbury, remember her? Gosh, she was on television for years and years. She was a great, great Broadway star. She provoked outrage yesterday by saying that women must sometimes take blame for rape. How about that statement? What do you think of that? Women must sometimes take blame for rape. That's Angela Lansbury. And a man down in Philo is appalled by a racist solicitation that arrived in the mail. This was an invitation to join a white supremacist organization. It's called the Racial Nationalist Party of America. Anybody else get that mailing? I'd like to know more about that organization or see if this invitation to join is widespread or just he just happened to get on the mailing list some way. I don't know. The Champaign City Council showing support for the bike-sharing rental system. That would allow users to park bikes anywhere when finished with them. The staff, Champaign City Council staff, is directed to report back on the regulation, fee options, and a lot goes into this. But they're showing a lot of support for it. And four more have thrown their hats in the ring for the March 20th primary election, including State Rep. Carol Ammons, who is seeking a third term in the Illinois House. A letter to the editor in today's News Gazette contends that the University of Illinois is now being run by a small group of malcontents. Meghan Markle is to become a citizen of the UK and to follow a lot of other red tape before she can marry Prince Harry. And we can talk basketball if you like. Like Illini got beat 80-73, lost to Wake Forest in the Big Ten ACC Challenge. So did a lot of other teams from the Big Ten get beat. This is going to be a pretty easy win for the ACC this year. And the Big Ten's had its way the last couple of years. Next up, for the Illini, the opening of the Big Ten season Friday night at Northwestern. Then you go back and play some more non-conference games and back to the Maryland coming to the State Farm Center. So that's some of the headlines. What's on your mind today? 356-9397. Text me at 351-5357. So if you want to talk some basketball, if you saw and heard the game last night, a couple of strange things that happened in there with regard to fouls. I've never seen them call a foul, go over to see if that is a flagrant foul, and come back and say that wasn't a foul at all. Wow. That's what happened. What do you think, Alan?
Hey, hello, Jim. Some way the game, I thought, we looked pretty good at times, and other times we didn't look good, obviously. I don't know what's the problem with our two marks, but our Mark Allstart and Mark Smith are not playing very well. Allstart is a senior, and he fouls 2 3-point shooters back-to-back almost, and that costs us 4 or 5 points. He can't make those kind of mistakes. He ought to be old enough to know better.
Well, he made the first 8 points of the game, didn't he?
That was it.
Yeah, there were too many turnovers in the game and too many fouls.
Yes.
In that first half, I looked up once, and we had 9 fouls, and they had 1.
Yep.
That turned around a little bit in the second half, and but that's too many. We just make crazy fouls.
We're still having a major problem with guarding the 3-point shooter. I mean, Wake Forest is not that good, but they played lights out last night. And I don't know. Aaron Jordan, if we didn't have him, and everybody wanted to get rid of him after last year, if we didn't have him, I don't know how bad we'd be.
Aaron Jordan?
Really good.
Yeah, I don't know. You say everybody wanted to get rid of him. Everybody thought he was going to leave. I don't know if they wanted to get rid of him or not, but... He's
well, he hasn't shown anything, basically.
Well, he didn't get to play much.
That's true. I understand that.
Hmm. But
when he did play.
He's off to a good start shooting the threes, that's for sure.
Real good. He's
all right.
Leading the nation, I think.
Hey, appreciate. Yeah, he's leading the nation in percentage on the 3-point shots going into that, and he didn't hurt himself. He made
4 out of 6.
Yeah. Hey, appreciate the call. Thank you, Alan. We'll take our first break right here. The phone lines are open at 356-9397. Text me at 351-5357. What's on your mind today? Give me a call. Let's get some conversation going here. We appreciate Alan talking a little bit about Illinois basketball. We can talk more of that if you like, and or anything else that I've had in my headlines, or maybe you want to bring up something entirely new. Let's take a break first and come back and find out who's next. This is an open line on Penny this first hour, and Tricia is next. Hi, Tricia.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I like listening to your show. I'm your first caller, and I hope you just keep it up. I was just wanting to say that a lot of the callers are calling in against the team, but actually we was out of the game from the very beginning. Because we was not only fighting the other team, we was fighting the referees, too. And that's all I got to say. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Well, I don't know. I know the fouls were certainly one-sided, but I think a lot of that had to do with, in that the first half, that the Wake Forest players were taking the ball to the hoop, and you get fouled doing that a lot. We were standing around in a semicircle around a zone defense, and we were taking in mostly jump shots, and we made a lot of them. But you don't get fouled very often doing that. So that was one of the reasons, a foul discrepancy like there was in that first. So we'll see. Northwestern got beat at the last moment, so did, I don't know, I just got all the scores here, and Purdue won. Purdue beat Louisville at Purdue, so that's one victory for the Big Ten. And let's see what Donald Trump has to say today. So now that Matt Lauer is gone, will the fake news practitioners at NBC be terminating the contract of Phil Griffin? And will they terminate the low ratings Joe Scarborough based on the unsolved mystery that took place in Florida years ago? Investigate! Exclamation mark. Also, just spoke to the president of China concerning the provocative actions of North Korea. Additional major sanctions will be imposed on North Korea today. The situation will be handled. And Benny says, I met Julia Reitz at a dinner at the I Hotel, where the featured speaker was Chris Herron. Julia got up from her table before the program started, went to every table to greet people who attended the dinner. I got to meet her. She is a very nice person. So if you have any texts like that, jump right in. And Trump also, the president says, economy growing, excluding hurricane effects. CEA estimates that the real GDP growth would have been 3.9% in the third quarter. Stock market at a new high, unemployment at a low. We are winning, and tax cuts will shift our economy into high gear. So he has got the phone out and doing a little texting this morning, just like all other mornings, it appears. This thing with North Korea, they launched what they're calling the longest-range missile yet. That was yesterday. And they claim now that it's a new type of intercontinental ballistic missile that can reach all of the U.S., including the entire eastern U.S. seaboard. The North said in a televised announcement, just hours after the test launch that had been successfully fired, they call it a new nuclear-capable ICBM that was significantly more powerful than the long-range missiles it had previously tested. It was the first missile test in 2.5 months, And President Trump told reporters in response to the launch that the U.S. will take care of it. And he just announced that one of the ways they're going to do that today is get together with China, and major sanctions will be imposed on North Korea. Ursula is next. Hello, Ursula.
Hi. I even hate to mention this after this, news. I mean, it's really kind of scary. Anyway, I'll go ahead. Oh, by the way, sorry to see you retire. Always enjoyed you very much. There will be a new job creation coming up. It'll be I think they call it a yenta or a duenna. That's someone that, is between young couples that, want to go out together. Or I think a yenta is somebody that arranges for, introductions and possibly marriages. So because, it's the normal way, I think people are starting to be afraid to even say hello to each other.
So who's doing this?
I said that's going to be a new job creation.
Oh, you're just announcing it.
Yeah, right. No, but, people are going to be, afraid to talk to each other for fear that, somebody's going to make something out of it that was never, intended. So maybe the old-fashioned way is still the best, even though we have women's lib and all of that.
A lot of people hug. I'm a hugger. There's a lot of people that are huggers. When you see somebody, man or woman, that you know or that you want to greet, give them a little hug. And it's never thought anything about it. And now you have to have second thoughts about whether you should do that or not.
Yeah, kind of scary. Okay, good morning.
Good morning. Talk to you later. Angela Lansbury, the 92-year-old Murder, She Wrote star, is trending on social media for all the wrong reasons. During an interview with British Radio Times to promote her appearance in the BBC's upcoming adaptation of Little Women, she was asked for her input on the sexual harassment scandals haunting Hollywood. She said, quote, "We have to own up to the fact that women, since time immemorial, have gone out of their way to make themselves attractive. And unfortunately, it has backfired on us, and this is where we are today." She goes on saying, "Women are partially to blame for being raped. We must sometimes take blame, women. I really do think that. Although it's awful to say, we can't make ourselves look as attractive as possible without being knocked down and raped. Should women be prepared for this? No, they shouldn't have to be. There's no excuse for that, and I think it will stop now. It will have to. I think a lot of men must be very worried at this point." Angela Lansbury getting a lot of there's a lot of outrage among women that heard her read about her saying that. It is 9:26, a break here. We're coming right back on this open line. And this text, I reviewed the goaltending call last night. Frame by frame, the ball was two-thirds out of the rim, then changed directions. Do I think it was goaltending? Yes. Am I 100% sure? No. Do I blame the officials? No. But it was a huge play. Don't know how good a defensive player that Tillman is, but we sure could use a big man down low on defense. And Justin says the dockless bike share program sounds like a disaster to me. Just look up the nightmares that cities have had to deal with get ready to see bikes in the boneyard. Nice, optimistic little text there. Champaign City Council working on bike sharing. It is 9:30, and Scott Beatty has the news headlines. We'll be back with more of our open line on Penny up until 10. Then after that, Julia Reitz. Here's Scott. Welcome back to Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. This is an open line at 9:35. We'll go up until 10, a break for the news, and then a conversation with Julia Reitz. Julia, of course, the state's attorney in Champaign County. What would you do if you got an application in the mail inviting you to join a white supremacist organization? Deb Prethy writes about that in today's News Gazette. A stunned and appalled Chris Butler called his local postmaster in Philo, then postmasters in Champaign and Urbana, to ask if anyone else had received one of these applications in the mail and complained about it. He said, I wanted the postmaster there to, tell them that there might be something going around. 63-year-old Butler also received a copy of what he received with the News Gazette, shared a copy with the News Gazette, and others that they might be receiving the same correspondence. Have you? Has anybody else gotten one of these? The application is from the Racial Nationalist Party of America. It arrived in an envelope postmarked November 22nd, addressed to resident in large scrawled lettering. There's a picture of it in the News Gazette this morning. Butler said, my first reaction was maybe one of my grandkids was sending me a card. Then he looked at the return address in Lockport, New York, and realized it couldn't have come from the grandchildren. I went in there and looked at it, and I thought, my goodness, this is insane. The application asked him to certify that he's a white American, 18 years old or older, and that he's in basic agreement with the racial separatist views and objectives of the RNPA. The letter goes on to ask the recipient to swear under penalty of perjury that he isn't or hasn't ever been a member of a law enforcement agency intent upon entrapment of RNPA members or its affiliates. The RNPA has pulled itself out of the Jew-controlled banking industry, so do not send checks, traveler's checks, or bank-originated orders. Send cash only at your own risk. Instead, send postal money orders. The Racial Nationalist Party of America described itself on its website as a group composed of white men and women of all ethnic backgrounds and religious beliefs who have united together to fight for the interests of their race. It's among the hate groups listed by the Southern Poverty Law Center under the category of white supremacist nationalist groups. Butler is a business agent for Plasterers and Cement Masons, Local 143, said he learned the application he received was mailed from South Suburban Chicago. He doesn't have a clue why he got it, since he doesn't share any of the RNPA's views. I'm a white Irish Catholic. I'm a union member. I have no idea how I got on the list. He must be the only one. I've asked several people. We're talking about it in the newsroom this morning, and I don't believe anyone has called in to say that they too got one of these, but it's kind of interesting to see what kind of stuff they're sending out. The Racial Nationalist Party of America. winds up down in Philo. We're at 356-9397. Text us at 351-5357. If you have something on your mind today, just let us know. Bob Townsend, speaking of Philo, Bob Townsend down in Philo, says, just when I thought it couldn't get any crazier for the University of Illinois administration, I recently opened the News Gazette and saw their latest endorsement of our local bullies. It seems now that the U of I will cave in to any very small but very loud minority. I'm referring to the further attempt at gagging any reference to our honored symbol, Chief Illiniwek. To allow this small group of malcontents to impose their absurd views on the rest of us is way beyond what this institution has traditionally stood for. The university is starting to look a lot like what one would experience in such places as North Korea or the society depicted in the novel 1984. This is an attempt at thought control and an assault on free speech. The administration should perhaps consider that other people, other than these self-styled victims, have points of view too. My family has had a long relationship with the U of I going back over 90 years and four generations. We have never considered that the chief was in any way harmful to Native Americans. To try to impose this small group of malcontents' views on the Big Ten Network and the U of I is beyond all reason. He's referring there to the last letter that Professor Kaufman and the president of the student body wrote to all the presidents of Big Ten universities and to the Big Ten Network, telling them don't show the picture of the chief on the television anymore, and also suggested that they, I don't know what they wanted them to do, maybe they wanted them to go out into the parking lot and find the people that were flying this flag, with the one that was on the BTN, and to tell those people that they couldn't fly it. You can't tell anybody that, of course, but who knows what the next step might be. It's 9:43. We take a break here. Phone lines open at 356-9397. Give you a couple of good stories there. Anybody have any comments on those? Or whatever you would like to talk about today is okay. That's what we do on Open Lines. Back after this. You know, from trimming the tree to shopping for that perfect gift, the holidays are busy, busy times, aren't they? In all the running around, reminds consumers to be conscientious of spending this holiday season. Listen to some of these numbers. According to the National Retail Federation, average spend per person, $967.13. Total spent on gifts for family, $478.38. 38% of holiday shoppers will donate money to a charity, and 37% plan to donate items, including meals, for needy families. Busey shares 7 holiday spending tips to keep your wallet as fat and happy as the jolly old man himself. Number 1, make a list. Check it twice. Know in advance how many gifts to purchase. 2, be a bargain hunter. From coupons to free shipping and deal hunting websites. 3, stick to your list. If you forget someone, add them to your budget and adjust the amount you spend on others. Factor in other expenses, like postage for cards and presents and greeting cards and wrapping paper and decor and food and travel and charitable giving. 5, review receipts from last year to anticipate costs for this year. 6, save receipts this year for a reality check. 7, be cautious with credit and review your statements carefully. Busey is committed to helping customers handle their hard-earned money responsibility while enjoying the holidays. Challenge yourself to be both meaningful and impactful with gifts. Remember, your time may be the most meaningful present that they receive. For more holiday spending tips, visit the publication page in the Resource Center on Busey.com. Take a look at that, and they'll give you some help. I don't know what you thought when you heard that Matt Lauer had been fired. That was kind of a shock to me. Some of these others have been, well, there have been the allegations and this and that, and then a few days go by or maybe even longer, and then finally people have been fired. In fact, a lot of them have been. Lost their jobs. But all of a sudden, Matt Lauer gets the word that he is gone. Lauer's co-anchor, Savannah Guthrie, was joined by others to announce the news this morning on the Today Show, saying this is a sad morning here at Today and at NBC News. This was from Guthrie. She said that before reading a note from NBC News Chairman Andy Lack, which says, "Dear colleagues, on Monday night, we received a detailed complaint from a colleague about inappropriate sexual behavior in the workplace by Matt Lauer. It represented, after serious review, a clear violation of our company's standards. As a result, we've decided to terminate his employment." The statement said that this is the first complaint regarding Matt Lauer's behavior that the company has ever received in the 20 years that he's been at NBC News. "We were also presented with reason to believe this may not have been an isolated incident," according to the statement. Lack said NBC's highest priority is to create a workplace where everyone feels safe and protected, and to ensure that any actions that run counter to our core values are met with consequences, no matter who the offender. "We are deeply saddened by this turn of events." An emotional Guthrie admitted, "We just learned of this moments ago. The Today team is devastated, and we are still processing all of this. All we can say is that we are heartbroken. I'm heartbroken for Matt. He is my dear, dear friend and my partner, and he is beloved by many, many people here. And I'm heartbroken for the brave colleague who came forward to tell her story and any other women who have their own story to tell." Guthrie said, "NBC will be covering this story as reporters, and we will share more details in the hours and the days to come." So I don't know about you when you heard about that. Maybe some of you were watching the Today Show when that happened. NBC News also fired Senior Vice President of Booking News and Entertainment, Matt Zimmerman, after he engaged in inappropriate conduct with more than one woman at the network. Zimmerman is widely known as one of Today co-host Matt Lauer's closest associates and confidants at the network. He worked for years as Lauer's personal booker and expanded his remit to oversee all of NBC News guest bookings as Lauer's power grew in the organization. "We have recently learned that Matt Zimmerman engaged in inappropriate conduct with more than one woman at NBCU, which violated company policy, and as a result, he has been dismissed," according to an NBC News spokesperson. And let's see what else they have in this same story. They're talking now about Weinstein. and said the New York Times would eventually break that story, which led to a barrage of high-profile men being accused of sexual harassment. NBC News' president, Noah Oppenheim, who is believed to have overseen Zimmerman, has come under particular fire and calls for him to resign for spiking the Weinstein story. So, it's hard to know, isn't it? Hard to know who is going to be next. The News Gazette at one time printed a full page of those that have been accused. Now they're going to have to go to a double page as the names keep piling up. I want to talk more about this bike sharing system. I am a biker. I'm interested in bicycles and bicycles and automobiles and trucks and motorcycles getting along. City Council last night expressed unanimous support for implementing this bike share rental system. This would allow users to park their bikes anywhere when finished using them. Now the council will decide if such dockless bike sharing systems should be regulated by the city with permits or fees. The city staff will present specific regulation options later, but some council members shared their thoughts at the subject at the Tuesday's meeting. Tom Bruno said the city should avoid regulation unless there's a real need or reason for it. And Councilwoman Clarissa Nickerson Foreman agreed. Both Mayor Deb Finan and Councilman Tom Bruno said their initial inclinations are to have light regulations or none at all. Finan said, "I really want us to cooperate with Urbana and the University of Illinois so we can have one permit, one fee, so companies don't have to go through a sea of regulations. I would like to also incorporate helmets." Well, that's pretty interesting. I've been a wearer of helmets ever since I started riding bicycles, and we were biking in Amsterdam one time, a group of us, all Americans with our helmets on, and here came all the folks from Amsterdam, and there are thousands of people riding bicycles there in the Netherlands, and they were laughing at it. They called them buckets. What are the buckets that you have on your head? Greg is next. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Jim.
Hi.
I know you're short on time here, but I was following that thing with Kaufman and Rosenstein and all these anti-chief people. You know, the News Gazette, if they would quit reporting that, every time he writes a letter or somebody steps on his tail and he calls the Big Ten or whatever, if they would quit responding to him, eventually he will go away.
Well, I don't know. If a guy, you know, a professor at the University of Illinois writes a letter and sends it to every president in the Big Ten Conference, and also sends it to the Big Ten Network, that's a news story, whether you like it or not, and I kind of agree with you. I just wish he would go away. That's been my wish for a real long time, but it is a news story when they do that, and I think they're obligated to report it.
Well, the U of I needs to rein him in. You know, if Jim Turpin was a employee of WDWS and started carrying on like that, I'm sure whoever runs that place would have you on the carpet. He'd tell you either straighten it up or you're gone.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems to me like the people in academia, once you get tenure or once you become a professor emeritus, there's not much you can do with them. Am I right about that? I mean, what is it you can do?
You're right. But the U of I, you know, all we ever hear about is institutional whatever they call it, integrity. Well, they have none over there. If they'd have stood up to this guy a long time ago, this chief thing would have been long gone. And I watched I didn't watch the game last night, but I saw some chief shirts several games ago. And that's what the Orange Crush folks need to do, is get in that end, at the end of the court, with all the chief stuff they can find. And there's no way the Big Ten Network will be able to not show that. I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, back particularly when they're shooting free throws, you get a lot of people from the crowd into the shot, and you're quite right. There's somebody here in town now that are printing up a bunch of T-shirts with the Chiefs, the Chief on them, and I think they're trying to, they got a little thing going, trying to get more people to wear those shirts for the games.
Yeah, I read those online comments on the News Gazette site about that story, and you can still buy all that Chief stuff. It's for sale on Amazon. Even the Big Ten Network's got some Chief stuff on there, but... Is Julia Reitz going to be on next hour?
Yes, she is.
Okay.
Well, why do you...
Maybe you could ask her for me. What are they going to do with this guy that disrupted that parade over there and took that guy's phone away? And is he looking at any charges? And what are you doing with him?
You're talking about the homecoming parade?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't... Yeah, were there arrests...
He assaulted the people. He assaulted somebody over there, took their phone, and destroyed it. I didn't see any charges in the News because that about that, but might ask her how that works. Of course, I know what she'll say. She'll say, well, we can't file any charges until we get a police report, and there was probably no report made on that. But
well, the problem there, Greg, and I do have to go here in just a couple of seconds,
yeah.
But the problem there is that the university police report to the chancellor.
Right.
And that makes it very difficult for them to make independent decisions on something like that. Hey, appreciate the call. I got to go. The News is next from CBS, then Julia Reitz here on DWS in Champaign-Urbana. And welcome back to hour number two of A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin, and as I promised, my guest is Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reitz. Pleased to have Julia on. She always gives us some good information, and a lot of people like to ask her questions. So now is the time, 356-9397. You can send a question or a comment via text as well. That number is 351-5357. Julia Reitz, how are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you today?
How do you like this place?
Oh, I'm getting used to the different chair and the layout here, but it's beautiful. You can see everyone.
Yeah, this is kind of like a fishbowl.
Yeah. People can come by and say hello.
Yeah, they come by and they'll yell at you. And
do they? Oh, no yelling.
No yelling. If we see somebody we want on the air, we'll just motion them.
Come on in.
Join us. Join the party.
Well, hopefully people will call. They always call and ask us good questions.
So. I know they do, and it's a pleasure to have you on. I want to talk to you a little bit about the budget, that six-month budget that the county board had passed, mm-hmm. and your concerns about a lot of things, not the least of which is the Youth Assessment Center. I know they're in that six-month budget, are they not?
Yes. Well, and so when we say six-month budget, there is a full-year budget. But the six-month part of it is what would be needed to fund the nursing home. Mm-hmm. So the budget is a 12-month budget for the county, but accounts for 6 months of financial support for the nursing home.
So what happens if they go to a 12-month for the then you begin to worry, do you not?
Right. Well, that's right.
12-month, which would include the nursing home.
That's where the discussion was about... if we might need to make cuts in other areas of county government. And so this puts that conversation off, which is, hopefully we won't wait until the last minute. I think those conversations need to be happening right now by the county board members, and decisions need to be made. Hopefully they'll move forward. Obviously, my opinion and the opinion of other countywide elected officials is that they should explore the option of selling, that the RFP should be issued so that we can see what buyers are out there, what options there are, have all of our options on the table when we're making decisions, and so that we're making decisions that are in the best interests of the county as a whole. That's our concern. I think the nursing home is a valuable commodity, but it also is extraordinarily expensive. It takes up a lot of our county resources, and from our perspective, county government is responsible for certain required services. And if we are not able to provide those required services because we are providing a service that, while it's laudable and while it's something that we've had for many, many years, and while it's something that we value, is not required, then we have to start making hard decisions. So that's what really was being discussed when things were being put on the table. Okay, if we can't afford all of this, we're going to have to make some cuts, and some of those things are going to be things that we don't want to put on the table.
Would that be in personnel or in programs?
Well,
or both?
I think it's important to acknowledge that both, because programs are personnel.
Yes,
you know, mm-hmm. Programs are run and staffed by personnel, and so that really is the vast majority of our county budget. Personnel is. We are very lean. We've been so really since 2008, 2009, when the economy went south and we were required to make cuts at that point that we've never really recovered from in county government. We all had to make cuts, and most of that was in personnel. So now, you know, we're looking at, can the sheriff put off replacing radios for his deputies out in the county? And you know, they're 11 years old now, so can we put them off another year? And I think anybody who has any knowledge of technology, and that's all of us, you know, would understand that putting off replacing 11-year-old radios creates a safety issue for those deputies for the citizens that they serve, importantly. And so, you know, those are the kinds of things that we're looking at. But personnel, absolutely. Again, because we're very lean in county government in what we would call commodities in other areas. So personnel has to be where we look, and personnel run programs.
Is it your feeling that the people that have been opposed to selling are leaning the other way just a tad right now?
Well, I think there needs to be discussions, and there has to be a reality check. And that's unfortunate. You know, again, I come from a perspective of saying the nursing home is a valuable commodity and has been something that we should be proud of having in our community. But at this point, the system of health care has changed. The system of assisted living care has changed. And we need to make changes at our level as well. And if we cannot afford to do this, and if continuing to do this is going to come at the expense of services that we are required to provide as a county government, then we have to make some tough decisions. And that's why people ran for county board. That's why they stepped up to make those tough decisions. And now's the time.
Now's the time.
Yes.
You know, I'll get off this line of questioning here in just a moment. But one of the things that crosses my mind all the time when we talk about the county nursing home is that the competition over the years is for assisted living and or whatever else they might provide has become just enormous. So there are
Yes.
places for our elderly and other people that are sick in virtually every little town around here now that wasn't always the case.
Well, and what's being discussed with the RFP, which is a request for proposals, basically putting it on the market, includes a number of limitations that would protect the things that we value at our county nursing home. And so it's not a question of saying if if we put this up for sale, it's all these people who are there are going to be out on the street. I think that's kind of a narrative that's been pushed that's a false narrative. And, you know, really the RFP will protect the values that we hold important in county government. And I think we if we don't put it out there, how will we know what our options are? That's really my thought, is let's get all of our options on the table.
Possibility, I suppose, that you put it out there and nobody will want to buy it.
Well, and then that's a decision point also, isn't it? But without knowing, we're going to continue, you know, we're going to run up against that six-month point, and then, again, we're going to be looking at, are we going to cut things that we're required to do, again, that are staffed by people who work for the county, who do great work, or are we going to make a decision that maybe we don't want to make, but it might be time to make?
Julie Reitz is our guest. Our numbers are 356-9397. The Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. We'll take a quick break here. When we come back, the phone lines are open for you if you have any questions or comments for Julie. Coming right back after this. We're back on Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reitz is my guest. You can call her at 356-9397. Questions and comments are invited, so jump right in or text at 351-5357. Before we get off the business about the budget and the county board and so forth, I know you're concerned about the Youth Assessment Center. And you're going to have to move now, right?
Yes. So with the successful referendum at the Unit 4 School District, they are going to start their construction project. And the Youth Assessment Center, which is a diversion program for juveniles, where rather than going to the detention center, officers can take a kid to the Youth Assessment Center, which is an actual physical location on Randolph Street, and they are assessed and referred for services in the community, with the goal of getting them on the straight and narrow, helping them make better decisions, and keeping them out of the criminal justice system. And so the building is currently, we're housed in a building that's owned by Unit 4 on Randolph Street, and they've allowed, they've contributed that for free for the past 3 years, which is fantastic. But they need that space now once they start their construction project, and so we are going to have to move. So we have been looking for other spaces and have found a number of potential places in the community. And now the question is, how do we fund that? And I'm working on that. We are working on that. And I'm hoping to have a very positive announcement to make soon, hopefully.
How about today?
Not today.
Not today.
Not
okay.
today.
Right.
But
no,
I think
no scoop today.
Soon, and maybe we'll let you be the scoop.
That'd
know
be
you've
good.
Always been very supportive of the program and the.
I was there with you once, so you might remember. It's
yes.
A terrific operation, but you're looking for a place. Are you looking for somebody to donate again, like Unit
yes.
4 did?
Yes, oh. absolutely. And so I'm hoping to have a positive announcement to make, and I think. This is, again, a great program where we keep kids out of the criminal justice system, which, you know, my job as the prosecutor is, people think it's to lock them up, but actually I get so much more value out of coming up with ways to keep kids, especially, out of the criminal justice system, and this is one of those ways.
Let's go to the phones for Robert. Good morning, Robert. You have a question or comment for Julia?
Well, just kind of a comment, Jim, for Ms. Reitz. I heard on the news the other night that there's a problem with the number of racial stops for traffic stops. And, you know, I can understand straight numbers, but I just have one comment about it. What are the causes of those stops? Why did they get stopped? And then compare those mm-hmm. numbers and see if it's the same imbalance or if it changes, because I would think that the police officer most of the time would have a reason for that stop.
Oh, right. And I think that those are really the questions that need to be asked in so many different arenas, right? What are the causes? What are the, you know, it's not enough to just look at the numbers and the imbalances, but really to dig a lot deeper into the causes that and the underlying issues. And I don't think you can't just look at the numbers and say, well, that's racism. because that's too simplistic. There's so many different layers to these issues, and we are looking at them in a variety of areas. So what you're addressing or referring to is the Urbana. The city of Urbana keeps track of the numbers of traffic tickets issued or traffic stops made in the city by its police department, and that shows a disparity, which is not unusual in the criminal justice system. That disparity exists across all levels, and not just here in Champaign, but really nationwide. And so what you're saying is absolutely true. How do we get down into the whys as opposed to just the numbers?
Yeah, I would like to see, when these things are reported, sometimes this news things get a little distorted, and if just possibly it could be made a little more accurate for the average person, they're hearing that, okay, this is the comparison, and now it's more, it's more correct than what we originally heard.
Yeah, I agree. Thank and like you. I said, I think that's across all areas and something that we look at and make sure, it's important, those of us who are in the decision-making role, to not be making decisions based on race, but on behavior and on those underlying questions. And so it's our job really to look at this in a deeper sense and try to figure out the answers to make sure that we're making the right decisions across the board.
I think some of it would come down to a little more common sense, but thank you for listening.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Robert. We appreciate your call. We're at 356-9397. If you have something you would like to ask, Julia, we're going to have to break for the news headlines here in just a moment. But who do we have on line two there, Ed? Let's see if we can get Larry on before the news. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning. They're just talking about the statistics and the number of this, number of that, and how it's kind of a racial imbalance. But when I watch the news and they show pictures of an armed robbery or at a convenience store or at a bank or if there's a shooting in town or whatever, it usually involves a minority. So I would think that when the police are patrolling, and even when they're having a traffic stop, that somewhere in the back of their mind, they are looking for people. And if these people somewhat fit the description, or there's something that corresponds with some witness about a car or whatever, that would be an imbalance. And I don't know how else that could be anything else. So I can't see that it's ever going to be 50-50 or whatever when so much of the crime that goes on in the cities is minorities. That's all I've really got to say.
Okay. Thank you, Larry. We'll let her respond here before the news.
Well, and again, I agree with Larry what he's saying. We need to look at behaviors. And unfortunately, the majority of victims in our community are African-American, are minorities, are women also. And, again, it's important to try to dig deeper than just the numbers to get down to the causes. For me, again, I do a lot of work in juvenile court, and I see a lot of young African-American who are making really bad decisions. And I want to come up with opportunities for them to learn how to make better decisions so that they don't end up as adults in the criminal justice system. Important to look at why, not just at the numbers.
All right, we're going to take a break here for the news headlines with Michael Kaiser. We'll come back after that with more with Julia Reitz up until 11 o'clock this morning. Here's Michael. We're back with Julia Reitz, the state's attorney in Champaign County. We're at 356-9397. Our text line is 351-5357. A couple of text messages have come in since we had to turn it over to the news department, and let me read those, and we'll go from there. What role does Julia Reitz play with the Champaign County Board, if any? Is she the spokesman for the board?
Oh, no, I'm not the spokesman for the board. As the state's attorney, I'm responsible for providing legal advice and representation to county government. So that includes the county board and really any elected or appointed official. And so my staff and I are responsible for providing legal advice and representation. That includes a lot of the issues facing the nursing home, from the issuance of the RFP to representing the board or the home or the board when there's a lawsuit, just a wide variety of capacities that we're responsible for. And then also, I am a department head. As an elected official, I am the head of a county government department, and so what the board does affects my department and my staff and how I run my office. The board is responsible primarily for funding decisions, for making the budget, approving the budget. And so that includes approving the budget for my office. By statute, as an elected official, I and the other constitutionally elected officials are responsible for the day-to-day workings of our offices, but the board is responsible for making funding decisions and setting the budgets.
Okay. That straightens that out. And here is another text. But before we go to the text, we did just get a call, so I don't like to have the callers wait. So let's go to Bill. Hello, Bill.
Well, hello. You could probably wait on this question because it's inconsequential to anybody but me.
Well, but you're calling, so.
Yeah, we'll be the judge of that, Bill.
Okay. Well, I was watching a rerun of the Dr. Phil show.
Oh, no.
Okay, it was first aired on 2010, and they had a YouTube clip of two girls fighting at Centennial High School.
Yeah.
And the mother was egging one on.
I was afraid that's where you were going, Bill.
Well, okay, and I don't remember that story. Mm-hmm. They said that she wouldn't come on the Dr. Phil show because she was facing charges.
Right.
And I wanted to know what happened and kind of refresh our memories about what happened to that woman.
Oh, okay. I don't want to give out wrong information, but I recall that situation where there were two girls who were fighting and the mother was instigating and egging on, essentially, the fight. And by doing that, she was charged with battery by being a part, basically by inciting or encouraging the battery. And I believe, although I'd have to double check, that she ended up pleading guilty. I think she didn't have a significant criminal history, but we wanted to make it clear that, especially as a responsible adult, that it was completely inappropriate to stand on the sidelines and cheer on your child while your child was committing a physical act of violence.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Bill. It's been a long time ago. Good memory there.
Right. Well, I try.
Even though it's in the federal court, from a legal standpoint, assuming Christensen's guilt, could he use revealing information about his victim's whereabouts so that she may be returned to her family to lighten his sentence? If he is indeed found guilty of what he's being accused of, what types of sentences might he be looking at? Plenty, I hope. Well, I guess we're still waiting to see whether they're going to ask for the death penalty.
Right. Then. So my understanding, and this is a federal case, it's not a case that we're handling in state court. We were initially in the investigation, and it's a very cooperative relationship that we have with the federal authorities. They have taken this on. And again, you're correct. At this point, they have not declared. The U.S. Attorney's Office has not officially declared if they're going to seek the death penalty or not. And in a general sense, certainly cooperation, assistance after one is accused can be taken into account in determining the sentence. And one would think that if someone, you know, had done what he's accused of doing and gives information that could help reveal the location of the body and give the family some comfort, that could be something that could go to his benefit. But ultimately, that's in the hands of the prosecuting authority handling the case, and frankly, in his hands. It's really up to him whether he's willing, whether up to a defendant or accused, whether they're willing to cooperate and assist.
And even if they decide to go for the death penalty, this has to be a decision of the Justice Department.
Right. Yes. It goes beyond just the local U.S. Attorney's Office in this situation, is my understanding as well.
Let's go to Denny. Hi, Denny.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you, sir?
Great. Thank you very much.
Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to congratulate you, Julie, on starting that Fresh Start program. I think it really addresses the most serious crime problem we have in the county. I was just curious, how are the participants doing with the program?
Well, we had put out some numbers recently, done a number of presentations at various government boards, at the Champaign City Council, Urbana, at the county board, I believe, also. And so essentially there's different parts to the Fresh Start program, but the, and I'm not supposed to call it a program, it's more of a process. But one of the pieces of it is focusing on determining who is involved in the violent gun crime in our community and bringing them in, those who are already on parole or probation, bringing them in and basically telling them, we are focusing on you and we're going to hold you accountable for your behaviors. But there is an opportunity for you to take advantage of an individual, a counselor, a coordinator whose job is to help you with the issues that you face, whatever those might be, employment, housing, those sorts of things, to try to help you change your decision-making process and move forward. So we have done two call-ins. That's where those individuals are brought in, and we sit down and have those conversations, and they're started on the path, and which account for 20 individuals. And really, to boil it down, a number of them have ended up reoffending, have been sent back to prison, have pending cases. One of them was a victim of gun violence himself and is deceased. I believe at least one has a warrant out for him, and I think there's five who are working with our coordinator and not currently in trouble. So a 25% rate at this point, which, you know, might not sound good in some senses, but actually, given the histories of these individuals, we're relatively pleased with that. Of course, we'd like it to be higher. But at this point, that's about where we're at. And we're learning through this process about ways, different things that we can do, that we need to do, different ways we need to address. And so this is an ongoing process.
Well, I'd just like to congratulate you, because I'd say, you know, given the gravity of the crimes, 25% is a really good thing.
Well, and I think that's right. And, you know, people say, oh, why isn't this better? But, you know, you are looking at people who have a lifetime of immersion in these difficult issues. And asking us to be able to turn them around on a dime is, it's just unrealistic. So we're trying to be creative, trying to come up with different alternatives other than, you know, other than the streets, other than the morgue, other than the prison. And so that's, you know, this is what we're trying to do. And it's a relatively new process still, so we've got to give it some time and see where it goes. But I do appreciate your understanding of the complexity of this.
Well, thank you, Denny. Yep. Appreciate your call. We're at 356-9397. You can text us as well at 351-5357. We're going to take another call here in just a moment, but when we get back, could you explain what could or what should happen to all these men that have been, allegations are out there about their sexual harassment for what seems like hundreds of different women have made these allegations now. The latest this morning over the high visibility ones is Matt Lauer. And I don't know, what might happen, and we talked about that a little bit before we went on the air, if you wouldn't mind to fill us in on that in just a bit. But first, let's go to John. Hi, John.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
does your office investigate public pension fraud?
That sounds like it probably would be something on a bigger level, perhaps a statewide or federal level. So the U.S. Attorney's Office does a lot more investigation into government issues, and probably the Attorney General's office. And we don't really have an investigation process. We really rely on local police agencies for our investigations.
The Attorney General would investigate, say, the teacher retirement system, public pension fraud?
The Attorney General's office has more of an investigative process and function, definitely, than we do.
I thought they represented the state entities.
Well, they do that also. And so, again, that could be something that the federal authorities might be better suited for, depending on the situation.
If an order, not an opinion, an order is determined void, does that make that issue ripe for litigation again, or is there a statute of limitations that would be open again?
I'm not really sure. I think you're going outside of my area of legal expertise, and I can tell you as a lawyer that it's always a good thing if lawyers don't really know the answer, that we don't try to guess it. So
thanks for your help.
Yes.
That's the first time I've ever heard anyone say that.
Usually it seems like we try to act like we know everything, but I'm perfectly
happy. Hi, Jenny.
Happy to admit I don't.
You're next. Hi, Jenny.
Hello. No click again. That's good. I like Julia Reed's office. I know they do good work, but hypothetically, in an issue where a gun was stolen from an individual and they were seen doing this, and this was about a year ago, and because parents got involved and the young people got scared, they returned the gun without the bullets. Why in the world would the attorney, in this report when it came to the state's attorney's office, why would they not go after, especially with the gun violence, why would they not go after those individuals who stole it and kept it?
Well, I think I know what you're talking about, and I think it more is a question of the ability to prove everything from a legal perspective than whether or not it's an issue that needs to be addressed, if that makes sense. There's what we can prove in the criminal justice system based on the entirety of the evidence sometimes might not be what we believe we know in our hearts, or... And so, we're the ones who have to make those final decisions. And I understand sometimes people don't agree with the final decisions we've made, but they're made based, again, on the entirety of the situation.
Let's take our final break right here. Back with Julia Reitz after that, and have several more minutes. So call us at 356-9397. We're getting some very good calls, as usual, with Julia, and we'll continue after this. It's 10:52. I'm Jim Turpin. This is Penny for Your Thoughts. We're visiting with Julia Reitz, the state's attorney in Champaign County. Quickly here, concerning FOID cards, does a juvenile offender's record eliminate them from getting a FOID card?
Yes, it can. Depending on the offense. If it's a offense that would be a felony if you were an adult, it can affect your ability to get a FOID card.
What about DUI convictions?
No, DUI convictions do not. Domestic battery as a misdemeanor does, but not DUIs.
Well, about this sexual harassment, what can happen to people? And we don't even know what these allegations are, because when these stories all come out, it's... called inappropriate and all those kinds of things, which could range from, a little kiss to something really that would border on being a criminal activity.
Right. Only if there is anything physical in the situation that could become a criminal offense. So if there is any unwanted touching of any sort, really, not of any sort, but... of certain types of sorts. I don't know how detailed I can get in that regard.
Like.
But, if there is behavior that rises to the level of sexual conduct, which is touching various areas of the body, that could rise to the level of a criminal offense. Or even not sexual conduct, even a battery, an unwanted touching of any sort, could that is provoking, could potentially be charged as a criminal offense, as a battery or a sexual abuse or a sexual assault. The other issues that have been coming up, the kind of the propositioning, the statements, the pressures, that sort of thing, certainly could be addressed in a civil arena through an employment process. And depending on the situation, you know, could ultimately end up in, again, in civil court, in a civil lawsuit with damages, again, depending on the situation. And so, or could be handled within the employer-employee relationship, such as what we saw this morning with Matt Lauer. Or could be a multiple ways of addressing those. So, you know, somebody, a victim could file a civil lawsuit, could seek a criminal charge, and the employer could act independently as well. So lots of different potential legal ramifications.
What if it was something that not getting that close to a criminal activity? And it's my understanding that a sexual harassment can be calling somebody by a name, calling a woman a sweetheart or something to that effect, and they don't like that, and they consider that to be a sexual harassment.
Well, and again, I think, you know, I'm not an employment lawyer, so I'm going to say that, just like I said before, that I'm not really an expert in the area of employment law. There certainly are many lawyers who specialize in that field, and I would hope, I'm sure, that employers are seeking their advice to make sure that they're providing their employees with safe environments and that they're addressing these issues when they come up appropriately. Because a workplace harassment situation, if there's a pattern and you can demonstrate that, again, could have serious ramifications for the employer. Even if the employer isn't aware of what might be going on at a, you know, at a lower level within within that business, the employer still is responsible for the workplace. So there certainly can be legal ramifications for a business, and everybody really should be looking at their policies, at their practices. And again, hopefully getting some good advice on how to ensure that everyone feels safe and comfortable within their workplace. Again, at a criminal level, the burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt is much higher than it would be at a civil level or within an employer-employee relationship context, where really the burden of proof is up to those entities who are involved. So, for example, this morning with the Matt Lauer situation, NBC looked at what they had and they said, it's enough for us, and so we're firing him. He might come back and say, I shouldn't be fired. The people involved, the woman making the accusations, might file a lawsuit on her own. All that, I guess, remains to be seen. But for us in the criminal justice world, our burden of proof is beyond a reasonable doubt, which is the highest burden of proof. So I don't think that a lot of these situations are going to come to the criminal arena, but definitely could result in some legal action in the civil arena where the burden of proof is lower, or again, through employment implications where there really is no burden of proof other than what the employer believes is appropriate for their organization.
Is there a statute of limitations on any of these allegations?
Yes, absolutely. And again, depending on the fact pattern and the situation. Generally, for a felony, it would be 3 years. It's extended based on the age of the victims, if they're under 18. But generally, for criminal actions, those matters need to be brought up within a relatively quick time frame.
Well, some of these don't fall within that then,
right?
Because these young women were, well, I was 17 years old and he was 30.
Right. And I think, you know, and again, the question is what were the allegations, and that, and how do you prove that? In Illinois recently, the statute of limitations for sexual assault against minors has been basically eliminated. There is no statute of limitations. And that was an action that was made in the legislature very recently. But again, that doesn't account necessarily for our ability to prove those cases, but it does allow us the opportunity to bring them forward at any time once the victim comes forward.
Julia, our time is up. It's always a pleasure. I appreciate
always.
It. Very nice to have you here.
Yes, and great calls and in this wonderful, nice new studio, and hoping I'll be back.
You will be before the month is out of the month of December here on DWS in Champaign-Urbana.